We're so close to the Pentagon. Sometimes they ask us to get the coffee. This is Warbird Radio.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to the all-new Warbird Radio Live channel. We're happy to be back on the air right across from the runway at Washington Reagan International Airport. Be sure and tune in Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern each week for Warbird Radio Live, followed by a new episode of one of our top-tier shows like the R.C. Scale Builders Show, Hartman and Hines, Over the Front, and the all-new Texas Warbird Report and Wings Over New Zealand Show. Listen, this station is all about community, so please join up with us on Tuesday nights and call in and become part of the fun and part of the family. Thanks again for tuning in, and join us Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
Good evening. This is Zane Adams live from Arlington, Texas, with episode number 10 of the Texas Warbird Report here on Warbird Radio. Join us at warbirdradio.com. Click on the Listen Now button. If you hear me now, you're already listening, but that's how you get to us. After the show, it'll be up as a podcast. Look up at shows up at the top and download us. Listen to when you want. So we really appreciate you guys being here with us, and share us around the world. Share us, warbirdradio.com, and let everybody, all your friends and neighbors, know about us. And we really appreciate those that join us every week, and appreciate those that join me here with the Texas Warbird Report every month. Like I said, this is episode number 10. Been doing it almost a year now. Well, I have been doing it a year. Had took a month off here and there, a little Oshkosh and, you know, other things that get in the way. But Matt's kind of busy with his announcing at times, his annual California trip and that kind of thing. He's having a great time with the Warbird Radio trailer and announcing air shows all over the country. And we really appreciate Matt letting us have a little air time here, a little piece of the pie here on the internet. But again, the phone lines are open at 478-787-4768. You can give us a call. If you got a question for our guest here in a little bit, give us a call and ask away. Also, you can Skype us at Warbird Radio. So check us out on Skype or the live, the old-fashioned way with a phone call. But I know, see our buddy John Bronner's listening tonight. Hey, John, over there in Virginia. I know a couple other folks are out there listening tonight. I really appreciate you guys being here. A couple little updates here in Texas. We've got my local EAA chapter, EAA Chapter 34, has got the B-17 aluminum overcast coming to Dallas. It'll be over at the Frontiers Flight Museum next weekend. I think it shows up in town Wednesday or Thursday. It'll be here all weekend. And they'll be doing their ride program over there and tours at the Frontiers Flight Museum at Love Field over there in Dallas. So get out and see that if you're in the local area here. I know the, I think it's next week or week after. Don't know my dates exactly, but the Randolph Air Show, the San Antonio Air Show's coming up soon. And that's always pretty good crowd there. The Rod Lewis, Lewis Air Museum gang is usually shows up with something. I know you never know if the Collings guys are going to show up with something. The CAF's got a pretty good presence. It's a good South Texas air show. It's one of the final ones of the season, too. So, you know, here in Texas, with beautiful 70-degree day today. And so we still got warm weather on this end of the world. And so air shows can still happen. It's usually it's about the best time for us down here. October ends and the heat goes away. But so looking forward to that. Speaking of the Lewis Air Museum, I saw on the internet today a video of the Constellation, the Bataan, out there in Arizona. I think the guys in California are helping with that to get that airplane up and running. It is running. They had all four engines turning, and I guess they're coming soon. Fly it back to Texas and put that dude back in the air. It's a beautiful Lockheed Constellation, and I can't wait to see another Lockheed bird in the air here in Texas, or at least in the United States. They're pretty rare birds nowadays. Beautiful airplane. Maybe one of the best airplanes Lockheed ever made, as far as a classic airliner and such. It's a beautiful airplane. So check out that video out there, the Lewis Air Museum Bataan Constellation. They were running the engines and getting close to flying her. Lone Star Flight Museum, a little bit of news here in the last month or so. Their PB-4Y, they've got it out of the hangar. And they're going to sold it or run a move it to the Pima Air Museum out in Arizona. I think Hurricane Ike did a number on the airplane. You know, it's kind of tough on an old warbird sitting in a hangar with 6 feet of salt water in it from that hurricane several years ago that came across Galveston Island. So it looks like that airplane's going to move to Pima, be on permanent static display out there. It won't be a flyer as they had hoped, but it's kind of a tough blow for the warbird crowd. But it is what it is, and it's better safe than sorry. And you know, the like I said, salt water's not kind to the old aluminum airplanes. So and then on another museum news today, I don't know if anybody's seen it, but it was kind of a neat thing to see. The National Museum of the Air Force has rolled the XB-70 out of its old hangar and moved it over to the new hangar today and had a little public move. And it's very cool to see that wicked-looking airplane out on the ramp outdoors. It's a rare thing for it to be outside, and sure looked good on the ramp. It's an amazing piece of artwork, aviation artwork, that XB-70 Valkyrie was. So, you know, look, check that on the line. I know there's photos out there on Facebook, and it's pretty neat to see. So we had a few of friends of Warbird Radio were there with their cameras, so check it out. But tonight we have a guest tonight that's made a name for himself in the air show circuit over the years, and he's a chief pilot and vice president of operations for a little museum called the Texas Flying Legends Museum, and that's Warren Peach. Warren, you there?
Yep. Hi, Zane.
Yeah. Hey, welcome, and thanks for coming on the show tonight.
Yep, my pleasure.
I know you're not exactly an official Texan. I guess you're an honorary Texan now since you do spend some time in Houston.
Yeah. I was there this morning. I'm back in North Dakota tonight. I flew my Mooney back home today.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, from the great white north, or soon to be white north, I guess.
It's coming. It's not here yet, but it'll be here soon enough.
As they say, winter is coming, yes. But, yeah. Yeah, the little... you guys started out as a little traveling museum, started up north, and then became the Texas Flying Museum. Kind of seemed to have burst on the scene, at least for us Texas folks. Give us a little background of where the museum, kind of what its nucleus was and where she started.
All right, well, we've got the Dakota Territory Air Museum here in Minot that we started 30 years ago, and it's grown into a pretty nice facility. We have 55,000 square feet of indoor display, with 60 airplanes and 17 acres outdoor with some military stuff on static outside, a 106 and an F-15 and a C-47 and some other airplanes. And our air museum here in Minot has been blessed and very successful over those years. And in the process of that, Dr. Hank Reichert had a P-51 called Dakota Kid. And he allowed us to display in our museum up here, and he became active in our museum. And I flew that airplane quite a little. And when it came time to sell it, he asked me to help him sell it. And that's where the folks from Houston came in. They saw the ad and were interested in the airplane. They came up and visited our museum and were impressed with our children education programs, our veteran honorary programs, and said that they would like to see something like that on the Southern Front and some of their other their outlets around the country that they're involved in. And they asked if they bought that airplane, if I would campaign for them for a little while. And that started the relationship between Houston and Minot, where they share their fleet of airplanes with us. And it was a blessing to me, because I thought when we sold the Mustang, that might be the end of my stuff. I had restored a couple PBMs and been involved in a P-40 before that, and obviously into zero with Jerry Beck and Toby McPherson. And so when they came up and got interested in this stuff and in a big way started helping both museums, it was really a neat thing for us to be able to have the airplanes travel around and support other museums. We did the Air Force Academy flyover when the Thunderbirds couldn't, and we did At that same time, we helped that museum in Colorado Springs with a display for 4 or 5 days. And we've done that at numerous museums where we can bring in a fresh fleet of airplanes and draw some interest to the local museum and campaign, not just for our museums, but other museums also. And it's been gratifying to be able to do that. And the veteran interaction that we've had with the airplanes, especially Oshkosh in 13, when we had 9 of our World War II vets down there, and we entertained them for the week. We had 11 airplanes, and we did the Warbirds in review, I think every morning there for 4 mornings, and did the reenactment on the C-47 with the D-Day stripes and the 20 reenactors while we were interviewing 3 of the guys that actually flew on D-Day. Those kinds of things are real special to me.
Oh, yeah. And, well, and I think that's in the Warbird. People often ask, you know, well, why do you fly these old airplanes? You know, aren't they precious and this kind of thing? And they are precious to us, but as well as I do, and I know preaching to the choir, but a flying airplane says a whole lot more to the world and to the people that see it and witness it than a static airplane ever will. And linking the veterans up with these airplanes is kind of number one priority, especially the older they get here. So.
Yeah, and of course, and Matt knows, you know, the Doolittle reunion and the Urbana thing with the Stafford brothers was another great event that we got to be part of, and that was really special too. And, and exactly what you just said, Zane, is there's a time and place for everything, and there's a place for static stuff, but we're sure honored and happy to be able to get it out in front of lots and lots of people by flying them.
Yeah, oh yeah, well, I was amazed, and I, you know, follow you guys a little bit, but when I was at Oshkosh this year, and we left that Saturday morning and we're driving home, we kind of went further west through Minnesota and down through Iowa, and we stopped in a little town right there in Iowa just to stop and get something to eat and refuel the car, and there was a little air show going on there. And come to find out, you guys were kind of the headliners at this this little peanut town in Iowa, which is amazing to me. I didn't know you guys did those kinds of shows. And, you know, there was a real crowd of people going into the air show. I didn't have time to stop, but I saw your airplanes out there. I could see it from the highway, and I was amazed that. So your support of smaller venues like that is a special thing nowadays.
We sometimes feel that we do better at a smaller event than we do a large one. We're able to interact more with the people, with the kids and the veterans both, and really get some quality time with the spectators. That particular show you're talking about was Mason City, and that's Doug Rosenthal's hometown. So, and that had, you know, some to do with it. But we also, one of our really great stories was on our way back from Colorado Springs and the Air Force Academy deal, we were on our way to Rapid City to do a display up there, and we got weathered out, and we ended up spending the night in Chandler, Nebraska. And they were gathering up busloads of veterans to take them to Washington, D.C. the next day.
Okay. So the honor flight, yeah.
Yeah, and here we come with, I think we had 8 or 9 airplanes in that deal, and yeah, we landed and we had a crowd all night long out there, and it was fantastic. It was totally unplanned, but it kind of planted a seed in our brain that, you know, that's maybe the kind of thing we want to do is tour around a little bit, hit some of these places, and give them a little bit of a heads up so that some of the towns that don't see that all the time can bring some people in to see it.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. So, yeah, that's funny. I was going to ask you about Doug. You know, he claims just every time I've talked to him, he's just a little old farm boy from Iowa. And so that was his home show then, huh?
Yep. Yeah.
Great guy, Doug, for sure. For sure. You've got a lot of great guys that fly and work for you and for the museum. And I know there's Doug Rosenthal and Bernie
Very, very fortunate to be involved with that group of guys and be able to have their expertise in flying, but also we've got over half of us are mechanics also. So when we get on the road, and of course you just mentioned Bernie's our director of maintenance, and he works magic for us more often than not, it seems like. And to get a group of airplanes like this and make all the dates that we set for them and keep them running is a project. And it's
Yeah, that's the whole other side that people really don't see and don't. It takes a lot of love and care to keep them running for sure. And I guess Bernie's doing a pretty good job because you guys show up with a crowd of airplanes every time I've seen you. So,
he's doing good. He's got help. I mean, when we went to the islands this last spring, you try to figure out what all the contingencies are and what you should and shouldn't bring along with you, and take five airplanes down there and get them down and do everything you're supposed to do and come back. There's some satisfaction involved in that mission.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's an amazing mission, too. And it's not your first trip to y'all's first foray out into across the water there. But how does that plan come about? To a lot of warbird pilots, it seems pretty nutty taking these single-engine warbirds that far out across the water. So,
we thought so, too, the first time. And we stayed as close to land as we could. And you don't really, going down there, you don't really get over water, completely over water a lot. There's one stretch in there, I think, where you're away from land for 35 or 40 minutes, but the rest of the time you're alongside land. But, the stuff that scares me more than that water is when you get up over the trees and mountains and stuff up in the northeast part of the U.S.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's nowhere to go up in some of those places, right? So I kind of got to where, you want to prepare yourself for whatever you're doing, but there's a lot of places that have as much or more exposure as the water, I think.
Yeah. Our local Mustang pilot around here, a little guy named Gardner, was talking to me about flying the P-51 out over the southern United States and those big tall forests and. Like you said, there's nowhere to go, and I guess the water's softer than a bunch of trees. But there's some fantastic images come out of that. So
yeah, it's something you have to think about, but you don't like to.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, that's one of the pilot's creeds. At least banged into my head flying the 172 was always be looking for that spot to put it down. So you can't. Can't get lazy about it for sure, and it's kind of hard to do. Imagine sometimes, but when you guys go to the islands, are you doing shows down there? Are you supporting other museums? What's the end game down there?
Our last trip down there was to support to do a show for one of the islands, and it wasn't just the crowd on the island, but it was also a bunch of people. Involved in a boat race or rendezvous or whatever, I guess you want to call it. But we were able to, in the process of doing that, we were able to do tours with all the schools in Anguilla. And it was amazing how many students came out and what a great time we had with those kids and the questions they asked. It's a little bit embarrassing sometimes when you go someplace like that and those kids ask better questions than the ones do at home about. They seem to be very well educated about history, and the airplanes meant a lot to them. And that was so some of those educational opportunities, and we sometimes kind of get thinking that we're the only ones that have got World War II veterans, and that's not true. They're all over the world, and they come out. If there's airplanes there, they come out and they talk and they tell their stories. And sometimes you see a little different side of things, and it's pretty interesting.
Oh yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, very cool. And of course, when you guys go to a spot like that, they don't have the opportunities to see them. I saw a Corsair 2 days ago, floating around in Fort Worth. And, those people, those kids, they don't have the opportunity to see these kind of airplanes very often.
No. Although, we were at Skyball this last weekend with three of our airplanes in Dallas out at DFW.
Right.
And they brought the kids out for, I think they call it Air Aviation Expo.
Right. Education Expo, yeah.
Yeah. Amazing how many of them kids asked if they could touch the airplane because they've never touched an airplane before.
Yeah.
And so you have a chance to have a little introduction there, too. And that's a big part of what we're after. That's what we want to do.
Yeah, well, that's cool that you guys came up for that expo. That's a great program they do every year here in the DFW area, and do it at the museum there, the C.R. Smith Museum, and then always have a hangar full of interesting airplanes. And of course, this year when they linked it with Skyball, I think they did that last year as well. But, you know, you really get some interesting airplanes, and the kids really light up. I've been out there for one of those, and like I said, it's a lot of inner city kids. It's a lot of Dallas and Fort Worth kids that, you know, for a lot of them, it's their first ever introduction to any kind of airplane, like you said. And I appreciate you guys bringing some airplanes up for that. That's good work there.
Yeah, well, it's we're proud to be a part of it. The things that Skyball are supporting with our veterans and their families is a big deal, and that's a big part of what we're trying to help with. And, well, it's a good venue for us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can imagine. So, and then, so what's, you guys, we've talked about where you guys started and linked up with Houston, and tell us a little bit about your Houston operation and how you guys operate. I know you move the airplanes around from Maine to North Dakota to Houston, and how many airplanes are in one spot at any one time?
Well, right now there's 8 airplanes in Houston right now, because we just moved a bunch down there, and they're in the hangar to be viewed by appointment. You can call the phone number on the website, and Scott, our hangar manager down there, will open the hangar up. It's not really a 8-to-5 museum just because of its location and the way the airplanes are stacked in there. If you can imagine 8 warbirds in a 10,000 square foot hangar, it's pretty tight.
Yeah, so, yeah. Well, it's kind of tight. I've seen 4 or 5 in there, and it's pretty tight. So
yeah. So we're not really open on regular hours, but we are available to get in there. We do a lot of wounded warrior and elderly veterans in there, where they can come down and sit down and be in there for, you know, a couple hours without having to be moving around all the time and stuff. And that's maybe more of our emphasis in Houston.
Sure.
Once the airplanes start leaving Houston, then obviously the museum here in Minot is open with regular hours, and we get a lot of guests throughout the year, and we try to make a big splash when we come back to town. And then I've got a business here in Minot, an FBO, and we do all the maintenance here, the annual maintenance, not all the maintenance, obviously, but we do the annual maintenance on the airplanes up here, so we're able to rotate them out of the museum from being on display into the shop and keep stuff rotating through the museum for a couple months in the summer. And from there, that's typically where we go out and do some central U.S. shows, depending on what's going on that summer. And then after Oshkosh, we typically take them out to Maine, and we try to do Owl's Head and maybe support the Brunswick show. And we've got a couple of shows for the local airport to help us out there. They bring kids out and stuff. And just kind of try to work the Northeast a little bit with the airplanes. And our tentative plan this year is when we leave there, is to try to set up a couple of museums that have been talking to us about stopping by, and actually, instead of just pressing direct to Houston, stopping and spending a day or two at each of those museums, en route back to Houston and share the fleet with them.
Yeah, well, it really helps these museums. I know you guys last year brought several airplanes up to the Kavanaugh Museum for their fall flight, or their spring fly day, I guess. It really brings the crowd out, especially if you've got a local museum that's just got a few things, or, you know, the same things all the time, and to get you guys to come by and add to that for special events and things, it's pretty cool. It's a great relationship, I think, for a lot of people. I'm glad to see it. It adds the spice of life. So.
Kavanaugh's got an awful lot of flying airplanes of their own, but there are museums out there that don't have any airplanes to fly, so it's an opportunity for people to actually see them run and hear them, and that's the Kavanaugh deal is really fun to do, and it does add something to their fleet, but I think even more impactful is when we go someplace where they don't have any flying airplanes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, get people to smell and breathe the air a little bit with the
Exactly.
Yeah, and dear Houston, I know you. And you know, we're Texas centric here with the Texas Warbird show, yeah. But I know I've been down there and been in that hangar. It's a magnificent hangar. It's a great facility. I love the B-52 seats at the bar there, and I know it's open during the Wings of Houston show. The hangar is you can see in and visit with you guys, and you guys had a pretty good show last week down there in Houston. Or a week before last.
Beautiful weather. It couldn't have been any better for the Houston show. And yeah, we had a great time. Got to fly some stuff. I got to fly formation with Dummy and the 262. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Got to watch them slats at work out there moving back and forth. So that was a neat thing.
He says those things really bang around too. So.
And they're moving all the time. I couldn't believe it. They looked like they were nervous. I don't know what was going on. But it was, I think every time you hit a little bitty bump, you know, and we were probably just exactly at the right speed. I don't know that airplane real well, but I think we were probably at exactly the right speed where they were just in transition all the time. But it was interesting to watch.
Well, and you brought out a new airplane for your fleet down there at the Houston show. Tell us a little bit about this.
Well, the Spitfire, we picked it up right before the Houston show, and that airplane was restored in Houston by Rayburn Thompson. It was finished in 2004. It's a Mark 9 Spitfire, built in 1944. And I hate to start quoting these things because somebody will prove me wrong somewhere.
That's
I think it was
okay.
44, and it flew flew 74 missions. It was the Polish squadrons in the RAF flew it, and the colors it's in now are the same colors that it was flown by a guy that was in the Free French stuff, and it flew over Normandy Beach on D-Day plus 9. That's why it's got the invasion stripes on it. It's got great war history, and it's got great Houston, Texas history with Rayburn rebuilding it, and he did an absolutely brilliant, smashing job on the airplane. I mean, it's really a pretty airplane, and it works great. And the records that he collected, we were putting things away just yesterday, actually, from the stuff we hauled back. I took my Mooney out to New Jersey, and Bernie flew it. Well, I flew alongside of him because I wanted somebody sitting there looking at it in case it started leaking or something. But he hauled a bunch of the spares, about half of the spares in the back of the Mooney, and then we shipped the rest. But there's 200 pounds of paperwork that go with that airplane of every kind you can imagine. And there's handwritten letters in there from the flight surgeon that knew all the pilots that flew it. It's just an amazing collection of history.
Wow.
And so hats off to Rayburn Thompson. He's gone now. He died Labor Day, but man, he did an unbelievable job of restoring and collecting the information on the airplane. It's a really neat piece. And I don't have a lot of time at Spitfires. That's the first one I've flown. So it was really a treat for me to get to fly the airplane. And I've got, maybe I get 15 hours in it now or something. And it's a marvelous airplane. They all are. I mean, if people ask you which one do you like the best, and I always say the one I'm sitting in.
Yeah.
So tell us
about the Spitfire. I mean, is it it seems to have a little bit of spindly gear and these kinds of things,
when you first look at a P-40, you think, man, that thing's got a narrow gear on. When you look at a Spitfire, it looks like it's got a narrow gear. And I, you know, knock on wood, I think it's a real honest airplane. I went out when I flew it the first time, went out and test flew it. I went up to altitude and did some clean stalls and dirty stalls and things. And, it stalled at 72 dirty with power back. That's pretty slow. And it was a real honest break on it and everything. The systems are pretty straightforward on it. One of the things that, in the cockpit checkout that I got, was pointed out and is very evident that flaps are a two-position flap. They're either up or down. And when
they're on or off.
They block off the back of the radiators, so you want to get them up. If you're operating in hot weather, you want to get them up right away after you land. But they're effective. They help you slow down. They help you come down.
Aren't they air-operated? Is that right?
They are. There's a lot of pneumatics in your airplane. You know, it's got pneumatic brakes with a bicycle thing on the spade that you pull, and then you regulate which brake you're using by where the rudder pedals are.
Okay.
And
that's something new a bit.
Well, I flew a Russian jet for a while. And that's real similar. Same system. And so it is pretty intuitive. It's really not bad. I think the biggest gotcha on that would be that if you were making a turn and you had one rudder pedal depressed to make that turn, and you held a constant pressure on the trigger, as you center the rudder pedals, you double your braking because it applies the same pressure to both brakes. So that might be the place where if you were hot rodding around a little bit, you might get the tail a little bit light if you didn't watch that a little bit. So as you come out of a turn, you kind of want to release the pressure on the brake handle a little bit so it doesn't lock things up.
Well, that's good for us to new Spitfire pilots to know.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Really nice airplane. It's got a real real lively tail. You know, the rudder and the elevator are real sensitive, and this one's got a small rudder on it, which I like old airplanes. I've had antiques my whole life. I started restoring the old stuff when I was 20 years old, and so I like Wildcats and P-40s and Hurricanes and early Spitfires and
things with round tails, huh?
yeah. And it's I enjoyed that part of that aspect of looking at the airplane. I think it's a classic looking Spitfire. It's really a pretty airplane.
Yeah. Well, of course, Spitfires, they've got that beautiful wing and everything else. Everything about them says class. So yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's a little bit tricky getting in and out of, I guess. Or well, it's got the door that comes off open, so it's not that bad, I guess.
You know what? It's really got a comfortable cockpit. It's very comfortable, and I was surprised. And the bubble looks really small when you look at the airplane, but when you're sitting in it, there's a lot of room for your head, and you got good visibility. You can turn around and look at most of the stabilizer, and you can't get right to the root, but it's not that far off of a D-model Mustang, I didn't think.
Well, there you go.
The mirror works good. You can see behind you. So it was a really pleasant experience for me to get to fly that airplane. And when I was a kid, I tell this story all the time. When I was 10, I painted one wall in my bedroom blue, and I painted a picture of a P-51 on the wall and started dreaming. And I used to read a lot about the Battle of Britain and those Ballantine books and stuff with paperbacks.
Right.
And, you know, I always read about Robert Stanford Tuck and Bader and all those guys. And so to get to fly that airplane and to go cross country in it and have some time to sit there and think is an amazing experience. It really is.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. It's a beautiful looking airplane. I can't wait to see it in person. I've seen photos of it and it looks pretty cool out there hanging off the 262 wing for sure. So
yeah. And then I went across, knowing Doug was in our Mustang on the other side in Dakota Kid, and Dakota Kid is the airplane that we sold to start the whole TFLM thing, and it's got invasion stripes, and the Spitfire's got invasion stripes. It was a pretty neat-looking formation from my view.
Yeah, very cool. The photos I've seen look really nice. Yeah. Really, really unique in the Warbird world for sure. So there's not many people. It created quite the buzz, which is a good thing. So
yep.
Always, when you can make buzz, that's good. That's good. So. Yep. I know I've seen you guys, and you touched on it a little bit, and we're talking about a little more flying airplanes here, but the Zero, it's pretty unique, and you've flown the Zero a lot, and you put on a heck of a show in that airplane, and tell us a little bit about flying that thing, because it looks like it turns on a dime, it flips over on its back real easy, you know, the loops are small, and it looks like a real high energy air show. That you do with that?
It's a great aerobatic airplane, and it's funny because it's it's light. It's got great low speed handling characteristics and nice roll rate at low speed. It's not a very good airplane to go fast in. 200 knots, it gets pretty stiff. Everything gets stiff on it. And so when I fly it, I'm just trying to demonstrate how different it is than our airplanes. You know, one of the things I joke about is that's the best World War I fighter ever built. It was made to dogfight. And if you're going to stay inside of a phone booth and fight, that's the airplane you want to fight with. But
yeah,
obviously, as soon as we learned what its strengths and weaknesses were, we changed tactics and made the airplane obsolete. And it credit goes to the Allies and the Koga Zero and all the stuff that was learned from it. But it is really a fun airplane to fly. And as I mentioned earlier, the Cavalry family was building that airplane up in Carmen, Manitoba, and we got involved in it in, I think, 1999. Jerry Beck and Tim McPherson and myself, and brought it down to Jerry's shop where it was finished in Wahpeton. And it flew in 04, but I didn't fly it until 2010. It sat for a while after Jerry's accident. And anyway, I flew it in 2010, and as I got used to it, started to appreciate the airplane, I realized that you could fly the entire air show at cruise power and never have. And that's what I do. And I think,
oh yeah, you just set it and leave it, huh?
I don't ever touch it. Once I take off and do that initial, I do a 3/4 roll on takeoff and a 180 and come back down the line and do a half cube and do a loop and leave. And I pull it back to 28 inches and 1800 RPM and close the call flaps halfway up and fly the rest of the show at that power setting.
Wow.
And and if you go any more than that, it just gets going fast and makes bigger loops, and that's really not what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to show how small a loop it will do. And
so what's your speed over the top in the loop? It looks awful slow.
Yeah, probably 70.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
It reminds me of watching a DR-1 fly, you know, like you said, the World War I airplane.
My min entry speed in a loop in that airplane, and I'm very rarely as slow as 160 indicated, and it's my min over the top speed is 60.
Okay.
I'm doing 180 at the bottom of the loop and going across stop at probably 70 or 80, something like that. Depends on what I'm doing. If I'm chasing another airplane, I make the loops big so I got more time to look for them. If I'm flying a solo show, I pull a little tighter just to make the loop smaller, it'll loop in 1,000 feet pretty easy.
Yeah, it's fantastic to watch. You do a really good show in that, Warren. A lot of people stand there with their mouths open, and which is a good thing for air show pilot to hear, I guess. But it is the truth, man. It is amazing to watch that thing fly around, and you do it at a good low altitude, so everybody sees it. You know, and a lot of times I know in a P-51 aerobatic show, you know, they're big, huge, beautiful loops, and it's kind of like watching the Thunderbirds fly, you know. And it's a beautiful thing, don't get me wrong, but that's
showing the difference. I mean, that's what a Mustang does, and when I fly a Mustang, that's what I do, because that is a Mustang, and it's Mustang's closer to a jet than a lot of this stuff. But so the whole idea behind flying all our different shows is just to show the differences in the airplanes and what their capabilities were.
Go ahead.
I said, and the Zero was slow. The capability of the Zero is that it did things in a small space.
Yeah.
That was its whole thing.
Yeah, I imagine it took some guys by surprise the first time around. So.
Oh, yeah.
Well, tell you what, Warren, hang on just a second here. I'm going to take a quick break. Give me a little, another drink of iced tea, and we will be back in about 1 minute.
We're so close to the Pentagon, sometimes they ask us to get the coffee. This is Warbird Radio.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to the all-new Warbird Radio Live channel. We're happy to be back on the air right across from the runway at Washington Reagan International Airport. Be sure and tune in Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern each week for Warbird Radio Live, followed by a new episode of one of our top-tier shows like the RC Scale Builder Show, Hartman and Hines, Over the Front, and the all-new Texas Warbird Report and Wings Over New Zealand Show. Listen, this station is all about community, so please join up with us on Tuesday nights and call in and become part of the fun and part of the family. Thanks again for tuning in, and join us Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
Welcome back to the Texas Warbird Report, episode number 10. We are live here. We got the phone open, 478-787-4768, or at Skype at Warbird Radio. We're talking to Warren Peach, the Vice President of Operations and Chief Pilot for the Texas Flying Legends Museum. And he's talking about the Zero and, you know, we're talking about the Spitfire. And I know, Warren, you fly the P-40 quite a bit. And how does that compare to some of the other airplanes?
Well, P-40 is probably one of the nicest flying airplanes of the bunch. And it's... You never want to say anything bad about any of the other airplanes because they all have their place. But I think it's almost unanimous that the two airplanes that are the most fun to fly are the Wildcat and the P-40. They got really nice controls and good roll rates, and the P-40 is a real gentleman's airplane. It's got a nice cockpit. It's easy to operate. The Allison engine is like a tractor motor, and it's just a really nice airplane, and it's got good ailerons. It's a nice aerobatic airplane.
Yeah, the engine's not temperamental like that Packard, huh?
Yeah, it's not as much. I think it's a much more robust engine than Rolls Royce is. I think there's probably, don't quote me, but there's probably half as many parts in an Allison as there is in a Rolls Royce.
Oh, I can imagine that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well. So, well, it's got classic lines, like you said. It has the classic look. It's got the round tail. It's a beautiful airplane. I think they're
it's a late '30s airplane. It's coming out of the racer and going into the warrior, still carrying a lot of the gracefulness and beauty that was being designed into airplanes in the mid and late '30s. It's certainly a nice airplane.
Tell us about the Aleutian Tiger P-40 that you guys run. It's a beautiful. It's a fantastic paint job. Tell us a little bit about that airplane.
Ron Fagan's group in Granite Falls, Minnesota, Warhawks, Inc., finished the restoration on that airplane. It came, let's see if I can remember all the years, that was a Lend-Lease airplane, and it ended up in a swamp around Murmansk and was recovered. It was involved in an altercation with some Luftwaffe airplanes, and there was two P-40s that I think became disoriented and ran out of gas, and they ended up putting them in a swamp. And they were both recovered in about 96 or something like that.
Okay.
And came back, and then Warhawks, Inc., or Fagan's operation, finished it in 2006 and took it to Oshkosh and got Grand Champion Warbird with it that year with the Aleutian Tiger scheme on it. And the Aleutian Tiger scheme, you're probably more familiar with it than me, but that was Claire Chennault's son that ran the Aleutian Tigers, and so it's got some reference there with the tiger teeth, but a little different look to it. One of the neat things that happened at Oshkosh this year, and we've been working on this for about 6 months, a lady whose father designed that insignia, the patch that ended up being the nose scheme, had the original patch from her dad that had been presented to him after they put them on the jackets and stuff. And her son looked just like her dad, so they came out with her dad's original uniform and jacket, and her son grew a mustache like her dad had, and got some really cool pictures with that family and him sitting posing in the airplane just like the original picture they had of his dad up in Alaska. So that was kind of a neat thing to do. And
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, so that paint scheme is significant. It's great airplane. They did a nice job of rebuilding it when we purchased it. Our idea was to just campaign it and leave it as much original as we could, the way they restored it, and that's what we've done with it. It's getting some years on it now, and we put a lot of time on it. We're flying airplanes $100 a year, and so the paint's not perfect anymore, but it still looks pretty good.
Ah, that's okay. I mean, it's a Warbird, so you know they. I think they look a little better if they're just a little touch worn looking. You know,
you'd love my T6.
Yeah, maybe so.
The kids walk in our museum up here in Minot, and they go, "Ooh, that must be a real one, huh?" Okay, yeah, that's a real one.
Yeah, your other airplanes are too shiny, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That's funny. Well, we're talking about interesting paint schemes. The paint scheme on the B-25, Betty's Dream, is tremendous, and it's something completely different than anything else out there as well.
Yeah, that's right. The Bat Out of Hell Squadron. That was the, let's see, the Parrot Heads and the Fish Heads and the Bat Out of Hell Squadron. And they were all those guys on the South Pacific that had the airplanes that were rigged up for strafing and skip bombing. And we've had an opportunity to meet, well, Vic Cadelman and Lincoln. I'm trying to remember Lincoln's last name out in Maine. Some of the guys that flew those airplanes, you know, and obviously this isn't the original Betty's Dream, but it's painted sure. up in those colors and
it's got the guns and the nose and the whole ball of wax.
To represent. Have you ever seen it with the nose opened up? Because all the ammo and all the ammo cans and the solenoids and heaters and everything are in there, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah. When Carl and Tony did that airplane, they really did a bang up job on it. It is gorgeous. And it's, you know, every gun in there is a, you know, it's demilled, but they're all real guns. And, I mean, it's a super, super accurate restoration. And that's when it's sitting there and we open the doors up, that's a museum all in itself. Just to go through that airplane.
Yeah.
The radios and just everything about it. The gun sights, turret works. That's really a neat airplane. And you're right, the paint scheme is spectacular. I think of a lot of nights out in Maine that used to sit down the end of this, on the ramp, on the end of a taxiway. And when the sun would go down, all you could see was that them white teeth down there grinning at you. It was kind of spooky looking.
That's cool. That's cool. Oh, and it is. It's a fantastic airplane. I saw it up close and personal last year for the first time down in Houston. First time I'd been up close to it. And it is a spectacular airplane. It's a great looking airplane. Like you said, they really did it upright. And I love the nose paint. I love anything a little different than everybody else has got. So, you know, it was like the P-40. You get, the AVG paint jobs. It is important and it is historically significant. But, geez, you get tired of seeing them sometimes, so, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you, but that P-40 paint job on those Flying Tiger airplanes is so iconic that it's just, you know, for you and I that see the airplanes every day, it's fun to see something different, but the general public recognizes that Flying Tiger airplane.
Oh, guaranteed. Guaranteed. Yeah. They almost expect it, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the talking here with Warren Peach here in the Texas Warbird Report with the Texas Flying Legend Museum. And one of the airplanes that I saw perform in Oshkosh that was the performance was a little bit on display, a little bit more than I've ever seen before. And that was the TBM Avenger. And most of the times when you see a TBM flying, it seems like a slowpoke, just kind of, lackadaisically flying through the air. And that fella you had flying it from Missouri there, he was really honking that airplane around, and it really sounded and looked good at speed there.
Well, Sam flies it well, and he does a good job of keeping it in our six-ship formation, and it's a big airplane. All right. As I said earlier, I restored two of those in the 90s up here in our shop, and I flew them quite a bit. And TBM's a great airplane, but it's a big airplane. People joke about it. They say it flies like a Super Cub with the gust locks installed because you can hardly move it.
Yeah.
And Sam does a great job with it. And when we put the show together and design what each of us are going to do, you know, we have a lot of time to do things in, and so each of us end up taking around 2 minutes in the show is what we get. And Sam does a good job of demonstrating the airplane. He does that 360, and halfway through the 360, he opens the bomb doors up so people can see him come open and honks around their heart and goes back out. He does a good demo with it.
I was impressed with it. You know, like I said, most TBMs are, you just get this nice straight and level pass across the field and, you know, glug, 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 glug across. But, he was really had it honking and sounding good and looking great, you know. And I guess Sam's a pretty good guy to have. It's good to have a member of Congress on your side.
We give him a pretty hard time about that if you want to know the truth. But yeah, it's good to have it around. He calls the TBM the darting hummingbird. That's his nickname for it.
That's funny. Yeah. Well, he's a good guy. Good guy to have in your corner, yeah. And he's a great.
He's a good guy to have in our corner. Believe me, it's not just for the TFLM. He's in the corner of general aviation in a big, big way, including warbirds, but every piece of general aviation. And when you spend some time around Sam, you understand how passionate he is about general aviation, but also about this country. And he's the kind of guy that we want to have up there.
Yep.
Pulling for all of us for what we do.
Oh, yeah. So. I agree. I wish I could vote for him. So. Yeah. And no better friend to aviation, and general aviation needs all the help it can get, for sure. But we just got a few more minutes here. Give us a little bit of your background. I know Matt was talking about you used to fly this little T-craft and do a heck of an air show with that thing. And your brother, Kent, he does some pretty crazy things in a little airplane. And you come from, a family of aviators. And so tell us, how'd you get started out other than being born with a propeller in your mouth?
Well, our dad started spraying in 1948. He was an infantry guy at the end of World War II over in the Philippines and came back here. And he started flying in 1937 and got his private in 1947, started spraying in 1948 and started teaching people to fly. And that turned into a flying service and a shop. Started selling Moonies in 1956, so I grew up going back and forth between here and Kerrville my whole life, picking up airplanes. And we all three of us brothers soloed on our 16th birthday, and I started building the Clipwing T-craft when I was 16, finished it when I was 20, and started flying competition in it, and then air shows, and flew a dual act with Dad and did a lot of formation work with Kent over the years. And the three of us used to travel around the North America doing air shows up until the Texas Flying Legends started. I was still doing that. And I'm busy enough with him that I really can't set an air show schedule for my little airplanes. I've also got an Edge that we built up here that I flew pretty hard for a while. And, got a lot of little airplane background. I've got, restored a couple monocoupes and a Waku over the years, and our FBO up here, our family business, is still going great. I flew for an international carrier for about 19 years, and I was captain on a L-1011 and a 7-2 and a 7-3, and did a lot of troop movements all over the world. And doing that, trying to support the flying service when things weren't going too good.
Sure.
And, so it's just always flew. Had to pick up whatever job we could do to make the bills pay, but more importantly, to have fun. And so
you don't land those little airplanes on a truck like your brother does, though, do you?
Yeah, no. I gotta have a bigger surface than that. I'll leave that to him. We've seen a lot of things get developed here in the Minot area over the years. There's been quite a few dog fights. There's been some pretty fun things have happened over the years. You know how it is between brothers if you got a brother.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. So your shop, doing well up there?
Shop's doing great. We've got about 35 people working here. And, we stay pretty busy with stuff.
All right.
So the end of our son? Family, I say the end of our family flying is, and my son just walked up behind me. He soloed a glider out of our farm strip when he was on his 14th birthday, and a PA-11 on his 16th birthday. So it's still going on.
He doesn't have a chance, does he?
I don't think he's got a chance. You're right.
Well, that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, cool.
Yeah. Well, Warren, I really appreciate you being on tonight. I look forward to seeing what Texas Flying Legends does in the future. And have a good winter. I guess you'll be back and forth between Minot and Houston. Hope you can spend some more time in the warm part of the country over the winter. But really appreciate you coming on.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Warren. And that's all we have for tonight with the Texas Warbird Report. Thanks for joining us here on warbirdradio.com. Look for us next month for another show. and look for Matt live every Tuesday evenings here in the winter times. So thank you for all their listeners, and God bless.